Welcome to the Legg Mason fourth quarter and fiscal 2015 year-end earnings call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow a formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the teleconference, please press star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this teleconference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Alan Magleby, Head of Investor Relations and Corporate Communications. Thank you, Mr. Magleby. You may begin.
Thank you. On behalf of Legg Mason, I would like to welcome you to our conference call to discuss operating results for the fiscal 2015 fourth quarter and the fiscal year ended March 31, 2015. This presentation may contain forward-looking statements within the meaning of the Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These forward-looking statements are not statements of facts or guarantees of future performance and are subject to risks, uncertainties, and other factors that may cause actual results to differ materially from those discussed in the statements. For a discussion of these risks and uncertainties, please see risk factors and management's discussion and analysis of financial condition and results of operations in the company's annual report on Form 10-K for the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2014, and in the company's subsequent filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission. During the call today, we may also discuss non-GAAP financial measures. Reconciliations of the non-GAAP financial measures to the comparable GAAP financial measures can be found in the press release that we issued this morning, which is available in the Investor Relations section of our website. The company undertakes no obligation to update the information contained in this presentation to reflect subsequently occurring events or circumstances. This morning's call will include remarks from Mr. Joe Sullivan, Legg Mason's Chairman and CEO, and Mr. Pete Nakwe, Legg Mason's CFO, who will discuss our financial results. In addition, following a review of the company's quarter, we will then open the call to Q&A. Now I would like to turn this call over to Mr. Joe Sullivan. Joe?
Thank you, Alan. Good morning, everyone. And as always, I appreciate your interest in Legg Mason. I welcome you to our fourth fiscal quarter and full fiscal year 2015 earnings call. But before we start this morning, I'd like to thank the many of you who have reached out to us with expressions of support and offers to help during these difficult days for Baltimore. It has meant a great deal to me personally and to all of Legg Mason to know that during such challenging times, our industry colleagues see the bigger picture and focus on the most important issues. I want you to know that while what has happened in our city has been profoundly disturbing, we believe in Baltimore and are committed to joining with the city to work through our challenges and come through this better and stronger. Baltimore is a strong, tough town that will heal and will get better, and we intend to stand shoulder to shoulder to help make that happen. Again, please accept my deep appreciation for your concern and your support. So, as we enter our new fiscal year, energized by significant progress and clear growth momentum and significant opportunities to address the meaningful challenges our clients face, I'm proud to say that the company has largely delivered on the key strategic initiatives that we've outlined over the past few years. And this positions us to grow in the short term while strengthening our foundation for the long term. Over the past couple of years, we have tightened up our cost structure and improved our operating efficiency while significantly modifying our affiliate portfolio to better leverage our global distribution platform. We've expanded our lineup of client-relevant products, invested further in our global distribution platform, significantly improved our capital structure, and we've achieved all of this while leading the industry in our rate of returning capital to shareholders. And I'm pleased to report that we have declared a dividend of 20 cents per share, up 25% over last year. And perhaps most importantly, we have returned to organic growth, generating nearly $17 billion in positive long-term flows in actively managed products. We have achieved this flow turnaround at a time when industry active managed strategies have been challenged due in large part to high correlations across most asset classes. In my closing remarks this morning, I will highlight five key takeaways that we believe are critical to understanding Legg Mason today and our broader strategy for tomorrow. But for now, suffice it to say that I believe Legg Mason to be in the early innings of a compelling long-term growth story. Our return to positive long-term flows underscores the power of our multi-affiliate model. It is the diversity of our offerings that best serves the needs of our investor clients. That same diversity of investment capabilities of clients, geography, and affiliates will deliver for our shareholders with multiple sources of growth and across a wide range of revenue streams. Our clients face many challenges globally, including persistently low interest rates, volatility in the commodity and currency markets, and global geopolitical turmoil. These and other factors have impacted economic activity and the potential for earnings growth. However, we believe these are macro trends that can offer thoughtful investors substantial opportunity. Around the world, demographic factors combined with lower economic growth rates, especially in developed countries, are creating challenges for governments, businesses, and retirement systems as more individuals move toward retirement. The significant need for and demand for both growth and income solutions is an enduring global phenomena that we can help solve. Even amidst many current challenges, we see investment opportunities expanding dramatically across multiple asset classes and sectors, including energy, technology, biotech, and infrastructure, among others. Therefore, it's an exciting time for those who can identify and manage these opportunities. We remain convinced that having a truly global perspective, a diversity of high-performing investment capabilities and product solutions, and highly effective ways to bring these capabilities to market is critical. This is what Legg Mason offers. It defines us. And now, let's discuss the quarter and fiscal year. Slide 2 shows the quarterly financial highlights for the company. In brief, my takeaway: we have delivered another solid quarter of financial and strategic improvement, our fourth consecutive quarter of positive long-term flows, and reinforced this improvement with the 25% increase in our dividend that I referenced earlier. I am very pleased with this continued progress. Now, slide 3 shows assets under management at each of our affiliates. As I will discuss more on the next slide, my perspective is simply: we have a solid foundation for growth with these affiliates, both in the capabilities and products that they have today and new products we are launching with an active, ongoing development pipeline. Slide 4 provides a snapshot of our affiliates, highlighting their flows and unfunded wins. As I look at our affiliate portfolio, I see three broad categories. First, high-quality affiliate franchises whose investment styles are currently out of favor. Permal and Royce fall into this category. Both are strong franchises and strategically important, and both will be long-term growth stories for Legg Mason. In the case of Permal, whose flows were basically flat for the year, the eventual return to a normalized, less correlated market should benefit their business greatly. In the case of Royce, which experienced meaningful outflows during the year, the eventual return to a normalized market should reward the high-quality company investment bias for which Royce has long been known. QS and Martin Currie are in the second affiliate category. Both firms have filled important investment capability gaps for us and have demonstrated excellent short and long-term prospects. Broadly speaking, we are still in the process of commercializing the investment capabilities of Martin Currie. And while we have experienced some early small wins together, those of you in the business know product creation work among vehicles and across jurisdictions simply takes time. As for QS, which will be celebrating its one-year anniversary with Legg Mason in June, we're beginning to see the power of our global distribution capabilities in tandem with the investment capabilities at QS. As of March 31st, QS had $1.5 billion in unfunded wins, underscoring continued strong industry demand for multi-asset class solutions and early success leveraging our Legg Mason distribution team, specifically within the sub-advisory channel. In April, QS was awarded an additional $2.9 billion sub-advisory mandate, which will fund in July. These unfunded wins, now totaling $4.4 billion at QS, are completely incremental to the platform wins that I referenced last quarter. Those platform wins, which start from a small asset base, have the potential for significant asset growth over time. And finally, our three remaining affiliates, Brandywine, ClearBridge, and Western, which are the engines of our current growth. Brandywine achieved strong inflows this fiscal year across all their product categories, including fixed income, multi-asset class, and equity, and their pipeline remains robust. Performance at Brandywine is broadly strong in equities and exceptional in fixed income across all time periods and since inception for their strategies. The bottom line for Brandywine is this. They are engaged in very active product development, they are delivering strong investment performance, and they are experiencing meaningful growth momentum in both retail and institutional channels. In fact, 18 of Brandywine's investment strategies, representing 98% of the company's AUM, have been positive net flows for the fiscal year. Now, ClearBridge, against an industry narrative that has questioned the ability of active managers to deliver alpha, that's a narrative to which we do not subscribe, by the way, investment performance at ClearBridge is strong, particularly in the 3 and 5 year periods. 10 ClearBridge funds have share classes that are rated 4 or 5 stars by Morningstar, demonstrating the breadth and quality of the ClearBridge product lineup. 16 discrete and differentiated strategies representing almost 75% of ClearBridge's AUM have positive net flows for the fiscal year. Now, I'm not sure this is well known or appreciated outside of Legg Mason, but ClearBridge has a remarkably successful history of creating new investment franchises within their business. ClearBridge was among the first movers in two categories that today are considered mainstream, dividend income and MLPs. And today, ClearBridge is expanding both its ESG franchise and continuing the build-out of its institutional business. And finally, Western Asset. Western has returned to growth and continues to deliver very strong performance with more than 90% of strategy AUM outperforming benchmarks in the 3 and 5 year period, a powerful record. That performance has recently earned the company prestigious awards from both Morningstar and Institutional Investor, among others. As a result of Western's investment performance and continued progress on risk management, consultant ratings critical to the institutional business have significantly improved, which is exciting for Western's prospects. Just this past fiscal year, 5 of 15 top consultants upgraded Western, while 7 others raised their outlook. Western's return to positive long-term flows over the past several quarters reflects the money in motion phenomena that we've discussed, but equally important, the strong interest in both their legacy credit strategies and unconstrained and specialized strategies, which we believe positions them very well into the eventuality of a rising rate environment. Slide 5 shows some of the many awards won by Legg Mason and our affiliates during the year. I'm certainly very proud of my Legg Mason and affiliate colleagues for the hard work and high-quality results that such public recognition represents. Congratulations to all of you. Slide 6 highlights the significant momentum we've seen this year in global distribution. our record gross and net sales reflect in part the investments we made in distribution over the last several years, which are now paying off. As pleased as we are with distribution's performance this past year, we believe that we are positioned to accelerate its performance from here for three reasons. Our diversification of products, clients, and geographies will work for us. Our continued investment in distribution will work for us. And our momentum in the marketplace will work for us. So let me be a bit more specific. First, the diversification inherent in our business by client type, geography, product, and strategy provides us with ample opportunities to grow our business. We are not beholden to or dependent upon a single or small group of products or client channels or geographies. For example, the concentration of our gross sales in the U.S. among our top three selling funds is only just over one-third of our total sales, according to a well-known industry consultant who has done analytical work for us. This means that almost two-thirds of our mutual fund sales in the U.S. are in products other than from our top three selling products. Of the 50 firms of all sizes surveyed by that consultant, 40 have higher concentrations of sales in top three products than Legg Mason. Additionally, every one of our six global distribution regions is in positive net flows, and with the exception of Royce, all of our affiliates are in positive net flow within our retail distribution platform. This is exactly the kind of diversification that we intend to build out further. Second, we've invested in our distribution platform by hiring nearly 50 client-facing staff whose impact is largely yet to come. We're enhancing our sales team's effectiveness through global sales training, increasing the air cover for them in the field with robust marketing initiatives and creative publicity campaigns, and increasing the efficiency of our sales teams by introducing predictive analytics to help pinpoint investor need and opportunity. And finally, we start the fiscal year with significant momentum in the retail channel globally, with improvement in gross sales of 26% year over year, up from 15% growth the previous 2 years. Don't underestimate the power of momentum within a sales organization and in the marketplace with clients. We expect to continue to capitalize on that momentum, reflecting a deep partnership with both our global distribution partners and affiliates, which is paying off with a meaningful increase in sales, net flows, and market share gains. Underscoring that momentum, Legg Mason has moved up 11 positions year over year to number 12 in our quarterly U.S. retail market sales ranking for active funds, and in U.S. taxable fixed income, our share of gross sales has doubled year over year, again, according to our industry consultant. In retail SMAs, we are the number two provider in the industry with $48 billion in assets. And finally, our cross-border market share has also increased significantly year over year, which we expect to continue as we commercialize products, especially with our newer affiliates. These are all testaments to the investments that we have made, the great work by our teams, and speak directly to why we believe this platform has significant momentum and quite a lot more room to run. Slide 7 shows the expansion of our investment capabilities, which, together with our distribution platform, is a key driver of growth. We define the market as having three broad opportunity sets in product development: classic active, next generation active, and passive. Traditional classic active is defined as style box, benchmark-oriented strategies that are broadly losing share to passive strategies. Here, we are growing by taking a bigger slice of a shrinking, albeit enormously large, market opportunity. Winning in the classic active space is a take-share game driven by strong investment performance and effective distribution capabilities. We have both. With the exception of some of our small-cap strategies, the strength we enjoy in high active share and income products, when combined with strong distribution alpha, is driving robust sales for many of our affiliates. Now, while the classic active products are broadly in outflow within the industry, next-generation active products such as flexible, alternative, and outcome-oriented strategies are receiving strong investor demand. And we are extremely active in next-gen product development and distribution. In fact, in just under 3 years, we have more than doubled AUM in next-gen active products, and we are accelerating that effort. We can continue to expand our list of next-gen active products both organically and through M&A. As you can see on the slide, building on the 23 products that we launched last year, recall we also, through acquisitions of Martin Currie and QS Investors, added significant new investment capabilities which have yet to be fully commercialized into retail products. And then finally, the passive space. We certainly see an evolution of a market which has been dominated by cap-weighted index strategies, a commoditized and highly competitive segment largely driven by price. The evolution in passive strategies is a migration of interest to smart beta strategies which seek to correct or overcome the limitations associated with pure cap-weighted indexed products. We have existing smart beta capabilities with QS, and a number of our other managers are also evaluating the strategies against their own investment capabilities. We view smart beta to be an opportunity to compete for flows that have been moving to index products for some time. We also see the continued expansion of the ETF as a compelling investment vehicle for some investors, and therefore another growth opportunity for Legg Mason. We believe that there are opportunities to use the ETF wrapper to translate our affiliates' investment expertise into innovative products. While this is certainly a multi-year initiative for us, we are extremely excited about the addition of our new ETF team, giving us the potential for extensions of existing products and the creation of new products in ETF wrappers. Slide 8 shows our investment performance. While the one-year number dipped a bit, we've seen before that it can bounce around. That said, I'm very pleased to say that performance remains broadly strong across most time periods. And with that, Pete, now I'll turn it over to you.
Thanks, Joe. Turning to slide 9, as Joe noted, we delivered another quarter of solid earnings with net income of $83 million or 73 cents per share. And this is our first quarter in some time where we have no integration or other initiative costs, so a clean quarter that we have all been looking forward to. At a high level, our revenues decreased primarily due to two fewer days in the quarter and lower performance fees. On the expense side, the majority of the decline was related to comp and benefits driven by the reduction in revenues. Adjusted income was $118 million for the quarter, or $1.03 per share. Average long-term AUM was up a net 1% from the prior quarter, with average fixed income up 2% and equity down 1%. This quarter's performance fees of $24 million came from a diverse group of our affiliates, specifically Brandywine, Martin Currie, Permal, and Western. These were better than forecasted as a result of strong performance at both Brandywine and Martin Currie. While impossible to predict with any precision, we estimate that next quarter's performance fees could be in the range of $10 to $20 million. In terms of capital deployment, this quarter we repurchased an additional 1.6 million shares and ended the fiscal year with only $14 million left on our previous authorization. We have fully deployed that amount in April and are already acting on our new $1 billion authorization, continuing at our usual $90 million quarterly pace, subject as always to markets and any alternative capital uses. Moving on to slide 10, The only additional item to highlight here is our GAAP effective tax rate of 34%. This quarter's lower than typical rate resulted from true-ups in our final return filings for fiscal 14, as well as changes in our valuation reserves on deferred tax assets due to final income apportionment across our various taxing jurisdictions. These combined to increase our earnings per share by 3 cents this quarter. Next quarter, we are anticipating that our tax rate will be favorably impacted by a recently legislated change in the New York City apportionment rules that will reduce our fiscal Q1 taxes by approximately $10 to $20 million. Excluding this item, we expect our GAAP tax rate for the full fiscal year to be between 35 and 37%. And, as we have consistently highlighted, our actual cash tax rate continues to run at a substantially lower level than our GAAP rate. Specifically for this quarter, we were at 6%, and for next fiscal year, we expect a cash tax rate of 4 to 5%, as you can see on page 21 in the appendix. Turning to slide 11, our assets under management were down 1% compared to the prior quarter, driven primarily by a $15 billion decline in liquidity AUM. This more than offset a 2% increase in long-term AUM and a $2.7 billion favorable market impact in the quarter, which was net of $6.3 billion of unfavorable foreign exchange impacts. Long-term flows on slide 12 were a positive $6.2 billion and represented our fourth straight quarter of positive long-term inflows. Fixed income inflows of $7.6 billion reflected continued strong performance combined with high market demand across a variety of our strategies and products. Equity flows were negative, with small cap being the primary driver, while U.S. large cap and income-oriented products continued to generate strong inflows. Looking ahead, our April flows will likely be negative based on what we know at the moment, given they will be impacted by a $1.9 billion redemption at Western that arose from a client diversifying managers and was unrelated to performance. But, as we have said in the past, any one month does not make a trend, especially in the lumpy world of institutional flows. And to that point, we are also aware our May flows will benefit from the $1.5 billion of equity wins at QS, which Joe mentioned earlier. Given the higher fees on these equity wins versus the lower fees on the fixed income redemption, the net result of this activity will actually be revenue accretive. Advisory fees on slide 13 show our average quarterly AUM along with the advisory fee trend, with this quarter's higher rate primarily reflecting the growth in retail assets at Western and Clearbridge, which were partially offset by the challenges at Royce. Operating expenses on slide 14 decreased by $27 million, or 4%, to $573 million. I will discuss comp and benefits on the next slide, but looking at the other line items, D&S expense decreased, reflecting two fewer days in the quarter. Occupancy expense decreased $7 million, as last quarter's number included the QS integration lease charge. Communication and technology expense increased $2 million, reflecting additional costs at affiliates that were offset in compensation and benefits. And finally, other expenses decreased $2 million, as last quarter's expenses included costs related to the Martin Currie acquisition and the disposition of LMIC. Turning to slide 15, salary and incentives decreased by $17 million. The decrease was primarily due to lower revenues resulting from the two fewer days in the quarter and lower performance fees. These more than offset the increase in benefits and payroll taxes due to seasonal factors. Transition costs and severance decreased, as last quarter included QS integration costs and costs related to the LMIC sale. The compensation and benefits ratio came in at 54%, at the higher end of our expected range due to the usual seasonal factors, which will also affect our next fiscal quarter. Slide 16 highlights the operating margin as adjusted, which increased to 23.8% from last quarter's 21.4%. The prior quarter's lower margin was primarily due to the QS integration costs as well as costs related to M&A activity in the quarter. The combination of these factors served to reduce fiscal Q3's operating margin by 3.3%. Slide 17 is a roll forward from fiscal Q3's GAAP earnings per share of 67 cents to this quarter's 73 cents per share. Fiscal Q3 included QS integration costs as well as expenses related to the purchase of Martin Currie and the sale of LMIC. These were partially offset by a reduction in tax reserves and the capital gain on LMIC, all of which combined to reduce last quarter's earnings per share by 6 cents. This quarter, the combination of lower revenues from the two fewer days, lower performance fees, seasonally higher benefits and payroll taxes, which were all slightly offset by a lower share count, reduced EPS by 5 cents. Higher mark-to-market on our seed investments increased EPS by 2 cents. Also, in fiscal Q4, as I previously noted, year-end tax items increased earnings per share by 3 cents. I'll wrap up on slide 18, which highlights our quarterly cash position, as well as our consistent and balanced approach to capital deployment. In the upper left, you can see that we have steadily reduced our share count by 52 million shares, or 32%, since March 2010. In the upper right, we've highlighted the change in our quarterly dividend over the same time frame. We now have 6 straight years of increased annual dividends, representing virtually a 6-fold increase since 2010. And while not shown here, our rate of returning capital to shareholders, reflecting both our stock buyback program and our regular quarterly dividends, was industry-leading over the last year and has been nearly double the peer average over the past 4 years. On the bottom left, you can see our cash position, which stands at $670 million as of March 31st, up slightly from December 31. Finally, on the bottom right, we highlight our current seed investments of $391 million across a diversified portfolio by asset class. This is a $17 million increase from Q3 as we continue to support our new product development efforts. In summary, this was a very solid quarter for Legg Mason. And as always, we have complemented our growth with a capital deployment strategy that highlights consistent dividends and share repurchases, along with significant investments in growth initiatives, both organically and through acquisition. So thanks for your time and your interest in Legg Mason, and now I'll turn it back to Joe.
Thanks, Pete. And now we'll be happy to take your questions. Operator?
Thank you. We'll now begin the question and answer session. In order to allow everyone the opportunity to ask questions, we ask that you please limit yourself to one question and one follow-up. If you have a question, please press star then one on your touch-tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you're using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. And our first question is from Chris Harris from Wells Fargo.
Thanks, guys. Your short-term equity performance has slipped a little bit. Joe, I know you highlighted that. You know, we know it's volatile, but just wondering if you can elaborate a little on what the driver might be. And then related to that, are you guys seeing any slowdown at ClearBridge as a result?
Thanks, Chris. Good morning. I would say no to question number two. As you know, most clients, both institutional and retail, look at the threes and fives for performance and don't focus really as much on the 1 year because it can be bumpy. And so typically it's your larger funds that if they are underperforming a little bit in the short run will have a magnified impact. So, you know, you can look at some of our larger funds and you can see that they were off a little bit vis-a-vis the benchmark and they'll have a disproportionate impact on that short-term performance. But again, clients really look at 3 year and 5 year performance for decisions on purchasing.
Okay, very good. My follow-up would be just a quick one on the margin. You guys had a really nice year for margin expansion. Wondering, you know, if you can comment, if we look back at what the drivers were, would you say affiliate mix was the biggest contributor? And then how should we be thinking about the opportunity for margin expansion in this fiscal year?
Yeah, thanks, Chris. Certainly affiliate mix is a big component, as we've talked before. Really kind of three key things that are going to impact this for us, one being growth and markets overall. The second is that mix factor, and that one gets a bit more complicated. And then, you know, last but definitely not least that we shouldn't forget about is our management equity plans, where we've put a couple of those in place, and we're already starting to see the benefit of the tiered rev share that we've put in there. But when you look at mix, it's really five different factors. It's a combination of what affiliates, what products, what asset classes, what geography, and what clients. And so I think there was a combination of all of those things that helped to drive the margin. But as we look forward, it's really about growing the bottom line. And, you know, so we're focused on bottom line, growing the top line. The margin will be an outcome, but a lot of that, again, is based on the mix. But we're very bullish with normal markets going forward that, given the scalability and the leverage in the model, that the margin should be going up from here.
Very good. Thanks, guys.
Our next question is from Bill Katz from Citi.
Okay, thanks so much. Good morning, everyone. Just stay on that theme for a second. Sort of curious, just given your evolution of the business model, your expansion globally, and the acceleration of the core business, how do you think about your comp ratio? I know it's a little bit of a fallout based on your rev shares, but how do you think about that going forward? Obviously, you mentioned some tactical headwinds into the next quarter from a seasonal perspective, but looking longer term, you know, what's the right range to be thinking about now?
Yeah, I think, you know, this is a trend we really started seeing probably a year ago, is that, you know, the mix of where we're getting the business from our affiliates and then also the tight cost controls at the parent have dropped the long-term, you know, kind of range for us in more of the 53-54% range. And as you indicated, we'll have another quarter or partial quarter of seasonal costs, which will kind of work their way through in the June quarter. And after that, you know, we definitely see it falling from where it is today. And, you know, long term, it's a bit difficult to predict just because of the, again, it's heavily dependent on the mix of the affiliates. But for the time being, we see it being in that 53-54% range on an annualized basis.
Okay, helpful. And then, Joe, maybe one for you, just sort of follow up on your comments about passive and sort of the minus sign there on your one slide, your focus on smart beta. When you think about that, you had made some provocative comments about, you know, maybe transparency is not that big of an issue. How do you think about the pros and cons of transparency versus the non-transparent alternatives that are out there as you think about growing that part of your business?
Sure, Bill, and I, you know, my views on that are not really any different than they've been for a while. First of all, I think this whole notion, this whole discussion about transparency, non-transparency, I think the jury is still way out on this. We, to be clear, are far from convinced that transparency is a huge issue for our PMs. In fact, we know for sure with some of our PMs that they have no issue with transparency. But now, that said, to be clear, there could be some strategies, there may be some markets where you know, non-transparent ETFs make sense, but I don't think a blanket statement saying transparency is a problem, we would disagree with that. You know, obviously the adoption of what are now sort of these non-transparent ETFs in the marketplace, it's not been particularly robust, and we're going to continue to monitor and evaluate it, but there's really no rush on our part to get there. What we haven't really talked a lot about, Bill, but we're excited about is, you know, obviously we do think two things. We think ETFs, the broad appetite of ETFs and being able to bring some of our existing strategies into ETFs or create new strategies in the ETF vehicles, clearly there's demand for that vehicle and that structure. And so obviously we hired a team during the quarter to really build out that effort for us. And then secondly, the opportunity in smart beta. You kind of referenced smart beta. And we see this as an evolving opportunity to capture flows that have been going into passive. We're excited about both smart beta and the opportunity to commercialize some of our strategies in ETFs. So, you know, it's an evolving discussion. We think both of which provide opportunities for growth for us.
Okay. Thanks for taking my questions.
Our next question is from Dan Fannon from Jefferies.
Hi, good morning.
Morning, Dan.
If we could expand a little bit on the fixed income market broadly, you know, last quarter there was a lot of discussion about assets in motion and the potential benefit you guys had, and we saw it in some of your numbers last quarter. Wondering how much you think you saw maybe this quarter and really the longer term opportunity institutionally. You know, your unfunded wins look good. I'm just wanting to kind of get an update if your view around the opportunity for market share gains has changed at all as you know, kind of time has over the last few months.
Sure. So if you think back to the previous quarter, we had $7.6 billion of net fixed income flows. But we estimate only $1.1 billion of that was related to, you know, to the money in motion phenomena. Well, that means that, you know, $6.5 billion of our fixed income flows for that, for this previous quarter, are what I would consider to be our kind of ongoing organic growth in fixed income. Now, if you look back to the December quarter, you know, we had $9.9 billion in fixed income flows, but two-thirds of those were really related to the money in motion. So what we see this as a positive. We see this as affirming the fact that our, you know, we've been building and growing our fixed income business, both retail and institutional, for some time now. So, you know, the money in motion opportunities are going to be largely institutional going forward, are going to be long and lumpy processes. We think both Western and Brandywine are well positioned to grow there from the money in motion, but also, and really maybe more importantly, from their organic growth opportunities. You know, what we're seeing right now broadly in terms of client mix is that we're continuing to get good flows in both the U.S. and outside of the U.S., both in retail and institutional. So if you look back over the last quarter, our fixed income business was split basically 63% or so retail, 37% institutional, and then 50-50 U.S. And international. So really nice balance, really nice diversification. We are seeing in the money in motion, a lot of that is really what we would call the classic active. A lot of those flows are going into core and core plus, because that's kind of a like for like, where they're leaving a certain type of strategy and coming to a similar strategy, core, core plus. In the more organic growth that we've been experiencing for some time, more of that is really in the next generation active products, things like macro ops, global sovereign strategies, absolute return, et cetera, et cetera. So we're really excited about the momentum we have. We've still got a lot of our pipeline remains fairly robust. We're seeing a lot of opportunities. Again, the institutional piece, going to be long and lumpy. The money in motion piece, long and lumpy. But we're getting good business, you know, institutional, retail, U.S., international. We feel pretty good about it.
Great. That's helpful. And then just thinking about the fee rate, you know, going forward in that mix of business, Pete, that you mentioned, and the benefit this quarter, I guess the one area, you know, money markets, you know, continue to drift lower. Maybe if you could give us an update on how that factors into that, and maybe an outlook for kind of asset levels within that category, given the changes that are occurring there.
Yeah, well, the money market really didn't have much of an impact on us yet, because we need to see a reasonably sizable increase in the at the short end of the curve. But I think, you know, you guys read the press just as much as we do and follow the Fed. You know, it's certainly a lot closer today around the time frame for that increase. But if you look at what we're doing in that space right now with the impending regulatory change, which is a year and a half off, but nonetheless, clients are very aggressively looking at what they're going to do with their liquidity monies going forward, and that's where Western's spending its time. So the key at the end of the day is, what kind of products are they looking for? We've already got a pretty good suite of other liquidity-like products, things that are longer duration than 90 days, but still clients today are using those for liquidity money, where they're willing to give up a stable NAV already and go out a little longer on the duration curve. So we're cautiously optimistic that the combination of factors that include the new bank capital rules, where the banks aren't looking for significant increases in terms of deposits, that's a bullish sign for us long term. So combination of, as those regs come into play and as rates go up, that's going to be a more interesting business for us.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan.
Our next question is from Michael Carrier from Bank of America.
Thanks, guys. Hey, you know, just one question on just the growth outlook. You know, the flows on the fixed income side have been strong, and I think you highlighted some of the strategies, you know, to improve, you know, the equity side of the business. Just want to get a sense, when you look at, you know, what's going on with QS, you know, Martin Currie, and then offsetting maybe, you know, some of the challenges at Royce, just where do you see that momentum, or like the pace of build, you know, where you feel like you can kind of break, you know, through, you know, into the positive territory on the equity side? It seems like the ingredients are there, meaning you kind of laid out the different strategies to try to, you know, get there, but just want to get some sense on, you know, based on everything that you guys are working on, you know, when you think you're going to see like the pickup in sales, you know, in some of these newer, you know, initiatives.
So great question, Mike. Thank you. Couple of things. Let me maybe frame it for you. We were actually sitting around talking yesterday about kind of looking forward from here and how we feel about our flow and our business activity. And I got to tell you, the team feels very, very positive about it. You know, one of the things, if you think about it, we reported our unfunded pipeline at the end of March, it being $7.6 billion. At the end of this month, or at the end of April, our unfunded pipeline is $10.1 billion. That's the highest number any of us can remember. I don't know if it's a record or not, but it's the highest number any of us can remember. But here's what's interesting. It's almost 60% equity. You know, we've been having very robust activity in the fixed income side, which is terrific, and we still have it. Obviously, 40, 41% or thereabouts of our, you know, kind of April 30 unfunded pipeline, 40 or 41% fixed income, and that's largely specialized. The good news about that is it's higher fee. But on the equity side, almost 60% is in equity, and that's really across the board. That's ClearBridge, that's Martin Curry, that is QS, that is Brandywine. And so we're getting good breadth. So, you know, look, we've talked about Royce. Royce has been challenged. They're going to be challenged for a while. We know that. But the diversity of our model with, you know, between asset classes and even within asset classes is pretty powerful. And we're getting a lot of looks in here right now. So we feel pretty good about it.
Okay, sounds good. And just on the margin, you know, you got a couple questions and you hit on it. I guess, can you frame, and I know this is tough because you got the markets and then you got the affiliates, but can you frame, you know, when you're seeing these inflows and if you get like a normal market backdrop, like what the incremental margin range, you know, can be, you know, going forward?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. And again, just due to all the complexity factors in that mix, it's difficult to give you a, you know, kind of a straight line as to where the margin will go. What we do feel very positive about is the things we can control at the parent level. And as you've heard me say before, roughly 75% of our costs at the parent level are kind of quasi-fixed in nature, so they'll go up by inflation, but we don't need to add a lot of costs to add managing a lot of AUM. So there's only about 25% of our costs at the parent level that vary based on the level of sales and the levels of AUM, and those are primarily commission-based salespeople, so they, you know, they pay for themselves. But the other thing to keep in mind, we've had record sales now the last 2 years coming out of retail global distribution, and we eat the full upfront cost of those commissions in the first year. Yeah, we keep those assets for 4 to 5 years, so that's another thing that kind of gives us some you know, real bullish sentiment around the margin over the next couple years, because we're going to have assets that we raised in the last several that aren't going to be costing us anything from a commission standpoint. So, you know, general, again, cautiously bullish on the margin going up from here. It'll be bumpy just because of all the mixed things, but the main underlying pillars are the leverage at the parent and then this persistency of assets that we only pay for once up front on the retail side. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
Our next question is from Michael Kim from Sandler O'Neill.
Hey, guys. Good morning. First, just in terms of the global distribution platform, could you maybe give us sort of a lay of the land, if you will, as it relates to where you see the greatest opportunities in the near term from both a product standpoint as well as by region, and then where you think you might be not as well penetrated and some of the initiatives there to maybe get better penetration across some of those markets?
Look, I think – good morning, Michael. I think, you know, we – I don't mean to say we have opportunity everywhere, but we sort of do. If you think about it in the U.S., and I referenced some statistics in my prepared remarks about the improvement in terms of our positioning relative to other fund complexes in terms of sales. I think that's very powerful. We made significant progress this past year. The opportunity in fixed income, particularly in the U.S., remains. Now, it's going to be slow, and it's going to be kind of a slow build and organic, but, you know, with Western being named Morningstar's Fixed Income Manager of the Year, boy, that gives you a lot of tailwind. You know, if rates rise, which, you know, we've been talking to people about, we're actually looking forward to rates rising because obviously that ultimately makes fixed income more attractive. Western, both Western and Brandywine, we think perform well or will perform well in a rising rate environment. So we feel well positioned for that. So we think we can continue to capture share in the retail space and fixed income in the U.S. You know, what's exciting for us is internationally, you know, we've always done a good job and frankly kind of punched above our weight as it relates to fixed income and even U.S. equities, but we've never really had solutions, you know, managed vol type things, which is what QS does, or the non-U.S. equity strategies, which obviously Martin Currie does. We are seeing some good traction and some good activity with Martin Currie Australia. Now, Martin Currie Australia is our legacy Australian equity business that we combined with Martin Currie. That's gone very well. It's been a good combination. We're seeing good traction with Martin Currie Australia, particularly in Asia. But we think we can continue to grow internationally very, very much with many of Martin Currie's strategies once we get them into our cross-border vehicles. So things like Asia, long-term unconstrained, European long-short, they've got some strategies that we think are very compelling. They are also very much next-generation strategies. And then we can continue to combine them with our U.S. equity strategies and fixed income, where we are still getting good action internationally. So, I mean, I hate to sound like, you know, we can grow everywhere, but we kind of can.
Okay, that's helpful. And then just one quick modeling question for Pete. You called out the uptick in interest expense this quarter related to what sounds like sort of an adjustment to an earn-out payment. So can you just maybe walk through that adjustment a bit more? And then is this sort of an exercise that you'll go through every year so, you know, we could see some further adjustments down the road?
Yeah, thanks. Good question, Michael. And it was really just a one-timer on the contingent payment on Martin Currie and adjusting the rate differential there between gilts and U.S. dollar. So we don't see that one repeating. So, but for that, you know, the rest of our interest expense is pretty steady state. Keep in mind, we did swap the five-year tranche of our long-term debt to floating, and that's actually been a great trade for us. I think we're up about $5 or $6 million on that derivative, but the rest of our public debt is all fixed, so it should be pretty steady from here.
Got it. Okay, thanks for taking my questions.
You're welcome.
And we have a question from Glenn Shore from Evercore ISI.
Hi, thanks very much.
Good morning, Glenn.
Good morning. Quick question. I guess Royce just renamed two of the small cap funds and looks like it opened up the investment policy a little bit. I'm curious on how a client or a consultant deals with that in terms of style drift, but I'm guessing it's meant to give better flexibility to the portfolio manager to adapt to the environment. Is that
Yeah, I think that's right, Glenn. And there's also, you know, they're also just looking to manage their fund lineup. Excuse me, I'm sorry. To manage their fund lineup appropriately. There is no concern that I've heard, and I wouldn't even imagine about style drift for Royce. They look, as I mentioned, they're clearly under some pressure, and that's going to continue for some time. But they, you know, they have clearly a solid reputation. They perform very well over the long term. Their process is consistent. It's their philosophy and their process is currently out of favor. But there's really no, I think, concern or worry at all about them, you know, changing or chasing performance. They have a well-earned reputation for selecting high-quality companies. That's just a style that's currently out of favor, but there's not going to be any drift there.
Okay, I appreciate that. And then maybe one quick follow-up on your comments earlier on the upgrades on the consultant side that Western was getting.
Yeah.
I was just curious for a little more color on how often they evaluate that and how impactful that is, and maybe specifically upgraded from what to what. Just it sounds like a big move up.
Well, it is. It's very impactful. So, you know, there's sort of generally regarded 15 top consultants, and of those 15, we had two already that were a buy on Western. We had one that was a hold. Of the remaining, 12 from there, 5 over the course of the year upgraded them, and the remaining 7 changed their outlook from, you know, sort of hold to positive. So those are all important indicators of how the consultant community, and let's face it, the institutional business is very reliant upon the consultant community. I think that reflects the fact that clearly they've improved risk management. Clearly their performance warrants it. And so I think it's a very good indicator for Western going forward. You know, I think we've all acknowledged they were a little bit in the penalty box for a while, but clearly they've emerged from that, and I think are gaining the support of more and more consultants. That portends well for them long term in the institutional business.
Okay, thanks very much.
And that was our final question. I'll turn the call back over to Joe for closing remarks.
Great. Thank you, operator. Appreciate it. Look, this morning I'd like to leave you all with what I consider to be the five key takeaways that we believe are critical to understanding Legg Mason and our long-term opportunities. First, with nearly $17 billion in long-term flows and a 3% organic growth rate, Legg Mason is definitely back in growth mode. And we look forward to building upon that momentum as we bring QS Investors and Martin Currie more fully online while we continue to leverage our legacy affiliate growth engines. Secondly, the diversification in our model is a key competitive advantage as our varied affiliates balance one another to the benefit of clients and shareholders over different market cycles. Third, Legg Mason's global distribution platform represents a significant strategic asset for both our affiliates and our shareholders. This year was a record year for distribution and gross and net sales, and with the exception of Royce, net positive flows across all regions and for all affiliates within LMGD. Fourth, we will remain very focused on improving absolute earnings and margin over time by maintaining a rigorous cost discipline, accelerating our organic growth, working to improve our asset mix, and by implementing new management equity plans at our affiliates. Each of these actions can be drivers of improved long-term profitability and potential margin expansion. And finally, we will continue to deploy the significant amount of cash that we generate between investments that expand our investment capabilities and distribution and returning capital to shareholders through dividends and share repurchases. So thank you for your time today. I'd like to congratulate my colleagues at Legg Mason and our affiliates for a good quarter and a strong year, and thank our shareholders for your continued trust and confidence. We look forward to rewarding your investment in Legg Mason again over the next year. And with that, I wish you all a wonderful day and weekend.
Thank you. This concludes today's teleconference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect at this time.